We're recording. All right, I'm here with Nick of Bent Window Records. I'm pretty stoked to have this conversation. I've seen you play a lot of times, man. in the days of Amnesia. And I think that I opened for you a couple times, maybe.
Sorry?
I think I opened for you a couple times.
I think Schoolgirl, yeah.
Yeah, that's
well,
right. Yeah.
With other bands too, I think. Like you guys, what year did you guys start in?
2015.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, you probably opened for us at least once then.
Yeah, I think it was at the Cooked House, if I'm not mistaken.
Which one?
The Cooked House, Brian.
Oh, Cooked House. Yeah, that was a great show. That was it was so I didn't know what to expect from it, but it ended up being really cool. And I love house shows, so those are always the best.
Yeah,
so.
His house is such a great house show. It's like it's almost cinematic, the vibe that you get in there, you know.
Yeah. Is it so? Did it shut down?
I don't know. It's been, I have no, I'm just out of touch with that world. But as far as I could tell, there, I'm sure that he wants to do shows, but I think that, I mean, the man's getting older too, right? So,
I can see that.
Smoking in your house for so long, right?
Yeah. I was in your 20s, 30s, and then maybe if you're in your 40s, they're kind of maybe pushing a little bit of the chest of okay, you know.
Yeah. But I can't speak for him.
No, of course not.
So the first thing I'm curious about is your musical origins. I dug up your pops' band, Bent Wind.
Yeah, Bent Wind. Yeah.
Yeah, and that shit is good. It has a serious following, man.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
Yeah.
Thus the name of the label, Bent Window. You know, so I mean, it was. I grew up with that. I grew up with very early on knowing that he was in a band and then, you know, getting the CD version because they had just pressed, I think, the CD version. I was in Victoria, I was 93. It's somewhere in my collection. I have to find it.
Yeah.
And just seeing that and be like, oh, dad's on the CD. That's cool. I know he had a record. I didn't know much about the record.
Yeah.
And subsequently, you know, finding out what it's worth and the big following and whatnot. So.
So was it a musical household?
Yeah. I mean, my dad, growing up, my family, I'm not Catholic now, but I was Catholic as a kid and we went to church. My dad played in the church band.
Okay.
My mom was a good singer. You know, she appreciated music. She was always really interested in music, but my dad was just obsessed with music, kind of in the way I am. You know, his workshop had records upon records and then he'd pick me up from school and it would be he'd play AC/DC or Joe Jackson or just a number of really kind of out there stuff, I think, for a kid, you know what I mean? I don't think
Joe Jackson's pretty out there for a kid, for sure.
Well, in a way, you know what I mean? It's you don't really, I don't know, I mean, is she really going out with him? You know, I mean, is that it's not that out there, but still it's still it's a little bit I don't think most kids were listening to that, you know, at all. So, and I saw him actually with my dad a few years back. So,
sweet.
Yeah, it was awesome.
So the thing I always wonder when I've talked to people that are in the world of either experimental music or more extreme music, I guess,
that's
sort of catch-all term. What drew you to sort of a commitment to that sort of, I don't know, sonic aesthetic, if that's the right.
I think it's a question I still sometimes ask myself because it's almost unexplainable. It's almost at the point where I feel like I almost can't explain it, but that makes me that draws me further into it. It's sort of the area of experimental and extreme music. It always to me expresses something within, you know, the listener or the performer that they are maybe not able to express through their words or through their actions other than that one artistic format. So it's you're able to channel your frustrations, you're able to channel your thoughts, you're able to channel whatever you're feeling into this realm of well, I don't have to obey, you know, any of the standard rules because I can just make something and I think it sounds good. Hopefully other people agree with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just, and there's sort of a catharsis, you know what I mean? There's, absolutely. When you listen to really extreme music, I think there's a level of catharsis. And, you know, I've heard other artists talk about, you know, the element of creating something to the point where you're so wrapped up in it that you don't even feel like you're there. You know what I mean? It's like a religious process or something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, the spirit is a totally, I think, extreme music and experimental music.
Yeah.
And it welcomes like a sort of a spiritual relationship with yeah. sound, right?
With sound. Yeah. Yeah. Big time. And I can't remember. I was talking with my wife about this is like, you know, I'm not, you know, a spiritual person. I'm not really, you know, one for believing ghosts or anything, but like, or the beyond or whatever. Even though I like talking about it and whatever, but I feel like when I engage with art or music or anything, it's like you get to that realm of like, that's the closest thing that we realistically have that is spiritual, is like that ability to create this sound that animals don't care really about, you know, yeah. trees don't really give a shit about this stuff, right? Like it's ethereal in our sort of like thoughts and actions. And it means something to us, but it means nothing to anything else, right?
Yeah, I think particularly with sound and music, that was a question I'm going to get to, but sound and music being kind of in the middle, that there is, it's the only, or the maybe the best medium for expressing things that that aren't literary. You know, film is quite literary. I've always thought of visual art as being almost passive, not in a bad way, but because you look at it and you look away, you know, like... whereas music exists in the room. I guess music is passive is more what I'm saying, but visual art is temporary. I have a painting next to me. That's why I'm looking here. But, but like experimental music, it's like it has to exist in an environment.
Yeah.
Exists in the whole of the environment.
Yeah.
You know?
It's there. It's present. It's kind of, it draws your attention in that I think there's a bit of a mystery to it as well. Like where.
Always. Yeah.
What comes to your mind when you hear something experimental, like, you know, the Zothical album I did, like my whole idea behind that was to do a narrative kind of like experience for the listener, and you download the album and it has a little PDF, you read that through, you listen to the thing and you kind of imagine exactly what was happening. Every song title is like sort of wrapped up in the story of what goes in. So for me, it's like you can, or somebody might hear it and want to think of something else, right? Like it's sort of, there's a lot more mystery, I think, than, or if you put on any record, really you have 17 different interpretations of it, which I guess you can say about any art, but I think there's a little more going on because it's just audio. And then you're like, well, what does this link to? What does that link to?
Yeah. And I think the creator in music will never have it's not as, I don't know how to express this, which is funny, but it's like, there's even mystery to the person who made it.
Because
you're interacting with technology or whatever you want to call it in such a direct way.
Yeah.
And then there's the fidelity. Whereas with something like film, you have to make a set, plan a scene. You have actors.
Yeah.
A lot of it is inherently like out of your control. Whereas with music, it's the pretending that you have control or whatever. Right.
And well, I think even now it's like, especially in our day and age where like someone like me can go and just download Ableton and make all this music with, you know, I have all my physical gear. I have some, you know, VST plugins and stuff, but, you know, I'm relying more on physical stuff, but it's that sort of no one else kind of came in the room and performed this with me. I created it on my own. I don't know if I could do the same level with like a film equivalent of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Without thousands of dollars. And then I still have to get like, you know, my wife works in film, so she knows this. So, like, I couldn't...
It's not a solo endeavor.
It's not. I mean, some people, I guess, maybe do it, but it's probably so much more work and so much more planning in some... Well, not that there's no planning in what I'm doing, but a different type of planning, one that I wouldn't know anything about, so...
Yeah, but it's administrative, like, with film, rather than, like, part of the process, in my
opinion. Absolutely. Yeah,
I always get. I'm always curious. So you started a record label recently. Have you have any experience doing that kind of thing before?
No, but you know, I've been doing music for 15 years. Like it's to me, it was that sort of you know, I'm here doing these projects. I have 3 projects on the go. I'm gonna put these all up physically, and then I'm like, well, why don't I just form a label to do this? And then I'm like, well, I felt lately that there's like, you know, I'll hear about. Not even just to do with the pandemic, but bands kind of like throwing in the towel because the momentum kind of stops. And I really want to like start kind of like catching bands that I think are really like important and cool and be like, hey, like here's something for you to kind of strive towards. Like here's a release. Does that momentum help? And even if they break up next week, it's a preservation where there's like bands that are like, I think I saw this one band like a million times and then they never had a recording. And it's like, well, I've been there. You should have a recording at some point. And if you can get that together, I can get, you know, a physical thing as well as my own stuff. You know what I mean? I think it's a logical like step in my sort of like journey in music where it's like, you know, I don't have a business background though. And it's like,
I don't know if you need one in the like world of a Bandcamp later.
In fact, you probably
benefit from not having one because you're
this guy might sell.
Let's sign him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my wife, you know, she ran her own business like doing film and we've had like chats about it and she's very like, this is how you got to do it. Like you have to do it this way. And I'm just like, well, yeah, it's in theory, this all makes sense. And we're going to do that. But, you know, I don't see people lining up. I'm not pressing like 500 copies of a noise tape or anything like that. It's 25 copies, you know, people are going to buy them or they're not, you know, it's, and then, you know, if they buy them, that's great. If they don't, then, you know, hopefully I can recoup the money again somehow, but yeah. It's okay. I mean, it's low enough stakes at this time and place that, it's okay. You know?
Yeah. Well, and I think too, like it doesn't take, especially with experimental music, it doesn't take a lot of people to be paying attention for it to be gratifying.
No, exactly. And I mean, and, you know, I think a long time ago, I did like an interview with like the Camosun College newspaper. I can't remember what it's called. And it was like right when I started Mitochondrion back in the day. And
listen to some of that today, actually.
Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah. And I think I said something like, you know, no matter what the reaction is, whether it's positive or negative, it's still a reaction and that's fulfilling. It was something along those lines. And I think that I still believe in that. Like, even if people are just like, ooh, that's cool. Like that's a reaction. And I think that's interesting. And I think that's, you know, cause it's not like, you know, they're going to stop it from happening. This is, ooh, and then maybe, you know, that changes one day at one time could end up being in a few months or a few years. You never know. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
that was my path to experimental music was,
saw
a house show, don't remember where, but it was a noise band and, somebody turned to me and said, have they started yet? Right. And I was like, I knew that they had started, but I was just like that reaction alone. I was like, I'm sold on this. I want to do that. I want people to say, has he started yet?
You know? Yeah. And I think, you know, I had this, there was like a sort of Facebook discussion today. I was vaguely a part of it. Try not to step in Facebook anymore ever.
Oh, dude, it's so toxic on specifically Facebook. Like,
I just think everywhere, like social media toxicness is everywhere, but it was, somebody's talking about the band Suicide, Teeman actually. Right. Yeah. And he's talking about how he didn't like Suicide and stuff like that. And I, you know, when I first heard Suicide, I was like, I don't know what to do with this. Like, what am I listening to? But that stuck with me, the fact that I'm like, what am I listening to? I don't know what to do with this. And over time, as I kind of would throw it on between, you know, other albums, it started to creep in more. And it's often those artists that I think you maybe don't know what to do with at first, or you're a bit like kind of thrown off of like, what? Okay, wait, what? That you form a more personal bond with, and then you tend to, I think, gravitate more towards over time rather than the instant gratification of some music. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with hearing the instant gratification of a good riff or a good thing right away that we all, you know, kind of jointly.
I love rap, like trap music for that reason. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah. Like trap music. It's a fun, accessible type of music. It's, you know, and it's
like playing Grand Theft Auto, man. Like,
yeah, no, I mean, it's, and, you know, I think everything has its validity, but you know, you go to experimental music and you're like, well, somebody cared enough to make this. So exactly. I might be the person to care enough to listen and follow this. Like, there's no reason not to. What have I got to lose? Like, I gain something. I gain someone else's perspective. I gain a new appreciation for a different sound. Like, it's a win-win situation if you follow it. Like,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Do you find that there's an importance with experimental music to the context of the music? I often find that... I worked with a guy who was very influential to my taste in music, who finally put out a record who was really good, Land Titles. You should look him up.
Okay. I'll check it out.
He would often tell me about these records, but he would know so much about how they were made or what their intentions were. and there were these crazy minimal electroacoustic records. And yep. I wondered, I'm like, would you still like this if you didn't know
that? Yeah, that, well, I mean, maybe it comes with developing the taste for it. Like, I mean, you can listen to something at first and like it for what it is, and then as you learn more about it, it becomes even more ingrained, or you experience it live and it becomes more ingrained. I find that's a big thing for me. There's records that I think if I maybe heard it just on CD and, like, you know, wherever, I'd be like, yeah, this is good. Like, band from Vancouver, Goat's Blood, long broken up, probably will never get back together. In fact, won't get back together. I saw them live in like 2006 or seven in a basement. And, you know, they're a big noise guy in the band, two guitar players, bass player, singer, drummer. Got through like four songs before the noise guy in the band just like flipped a table and like threw a cinder block into the drummer. Like,
yeah,
it got chaotic. And because I saw that and the music was so chaotic, it was like this, like, oh my God, like this is something. Like, this is an energy. This isn't just like, you know, just the music is great, but it adding this energy to it and this like fear and this unpredictability, it made it like, okay, this is one of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
And I saw their CD is like sitting over here, and I can put it on at any time. Like, no matter how I'm feeling, just put it on. It's there, you know?
Yeah. That's the you know, they were exercising catharsis.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Exactly.
I mean, throwing a cinder block at your drummer, that's catharsis, man.
Well, I don't know. That's like, man, how much drugs there were.
Maybe.
You know, I mean, whatever though. Like, I mean, it was chaos, but I mean, like that's what that kind of, you know, it goes with the territory of the music. Like it's kind of, I don't think they're throwing a cinder block at me, but, you know, I think it was something, it felt special. I don't know. It sounds terrible, yeah. But it felt like a moment, and it felt like a sort of like, whoa. And to them, I'm sure they just played a show and the guy got a little bit too drunk and threw something, like,
yeah,
you know,
I've been there.
So I hope that answers your question. I don't know if it's too tangential what I'm saying, but
tangent away.
Yeah.
Yeah. The N Antony record. So you recorded that. Is that how you pronounce it, right? N Antony?
N Antony, yeah.
Yeah. So it was I believe it was Forms, the most recent one from a couple
Forms,
weeks ago.
Yeah.
You recorded it from a CRT TV in 2004. So,
yeah.
What's
yeah.
I want the full background. I listened to it a couple times. I want to know the
story.
Oh,
good. Good. Yeah. So I think in high school I got my first bass. 2003 was when, you know, Mitochondria was first kind of starting. You know, I was going to Nick, the guitar player's house, and jamming. I bought a bass pedal, and the bass pedal I don't have anymore. It's long gone, broken somehow. And it had a looper on it. And I think I bought a Merzbow album in high school. Like, just,
yeah, as
and
you
I
do.
Was listening. And yeah, I was like, whoa, this is really fucking weird. Like, this is like 2002. Like, I've never heard anything like this. And I was like, I wonder if I could do something like in a similar style. And I had, you know, my dad was a big believer in like, you should always have a tape player in your house, and you should always record any ideas that you have, anything, just record it, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, you know, I'll set this up as best I could. It was, I wonder if I actually still, oh, you know what? This is probably the tape recorder I was recorded on. Sorry, if this is a bit of a journey of a, so like, this is probably the tape recorder I was recorded on, and it has a little, I don't know where the thing, there's a little mic right there.
Okay, hell yeah.
And I probably, how I set it up is right near the speaker of the TV. And then I took the audio out of the TV, plugged it into the bass pedal, and started looping sort of the tones of changing it from, what is it? The button you press to do the input. So it changes that input. So it has that tone. And so I started, you know, kind of, okay, I can turn that up a bit. And I can put a little bit of distortion on it and loop parts of that, and then change chant. And I kind of just did this thing, and it was just spontaneous for me. And you know, the whole thing is like, I guess it's about just an hour, like under an hour. And I just sat there, and it was like probably 2 a.m. with me with headphones sitting there, you know, recording and, you know, whatever. And, you know, I thought it was a four track maybe, but should probably change that in the bio for it. But, and then I actually put it on the four track, that's right, and so on and so forth. So it became what it is now. It was sitting just kind of doing nothing, and I just decided to pick it up and throw it together. I ran it through a bunch of pedals and whatnot. And it is what it is now. I really like it. I think it's a great recording. I think, you know, I listen to it myself. It's like one of those things where, like, sometimes you record things and I'm like, I can listen to it once in a while, but this is like one that I can actually just tune in and zone out if I'm on a bus ride home.
Yeah. I found the record sounded different. I listened to it on my laptop speakers because I'm a bad person who does that a lot.
That's okay.
And I listened to it with headphones. And it was a different record, completely different record.
For me, it's like, even if you're listening to it digitally, I don't think it really does it justice. I think the format that, like, it was recorded to tape, put on to Ableton, kind of given a little bit of, like, just a tiny bit of compression to give it, like, you know, so it doesn't peak all over the place.
Yeah.
And then put it back on tape through, you know, duplication. And I think, like, it has to be kind of be, like, it's best heard on that cassette version where, you know, I'll put it on the 4-track over here and just press play on the headphones. And it has this quality, you know, where it's there. And it's sort of like, you know, I always imagine when I listen to it, this kind of nightmarish world of, you know, the cover is very indicative of what it sounds like, I think, where it's just that's the kind of package, you know, the package kind of works with it. And even the fact the physical version, you know, I sat there and where is this thing? I made the little, like, labels on this little puncher thing. And that was part of it too, because I wanted it to be like this experience of opening up, what the fuck is this? What is this weird, almost like a video cassette, but it's not a video cassette. It sounds like what you'd hear on a video cassette. Like, so just, I don't know. I like that whole very bizarre, it works together, you know? So.
Yeah. I know that, like, cassette culture is something that I think will never die, simply because it has that kind of exciting, like zine quality. Is that, maybe that's the
yeah.
Right? But, like, you can sneak a lot of shit in a cassette.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think that, like, I had a really, like, opposition to cassettes for a long time, because I grew up, like, I think, how old are you?
I'm 25.
You're 25. I'm 35. So, like,
okay.
I grew up with a ton. I don't know if you had cassettes as a younger kid.
I destroyed a lot of my dad's cassettes when I was 2 years old. Yeah, that's my relationship with it. I remember destroying a Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts
Club
on cassette. That's a memory of mine.
Yeah. I know that, like, I had a little suitcase. It was a suitcase, like, yay big, you know, as a little kid, of cassettes. It was, like, the Ninja Turtles soundtrack, the Batman soundtrack, MC Hammer.
Good records. The Batman soundtrack is awesome, dude.
The Batman soundtrack, yeah. And I haven't even seen, at the time, I hadn't seen the Batman movie, so I don't know. But the Ninja Turtles one, I think, was the best. But, and, like, horror movie soundtrack, not horror movie, but, like, haunted house soundtracks was another one I had.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Of, like, you know, the door creaking open, you know, all that kind of stuff like that.
I feel like the folly of late 70s, 80s horror movies often is what accidentally gets people into experimental music.
Yeah, maybe, because it was meant to be like the, you know, the soundtrack you put on at a haunted house for kids or something, but it still actually sounded quite creepy.
Yeah.
So it's like you'd press play, and it was actually, I remember, like, listening to it and being like, oh, you know, like, but I still had it. And I still
take it out of that context, right?
Yeah. That's
what always interests me about field recording records.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Listening to bear sounds in a place where there's no bears is very bizarre. Yeah.
But, you know, like, for me, like, having this as a kid, I remember they would get stuck in the tape player, like, all the time. And the tape would come out, da 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 da. And then CDs came along. I was like, okay, tapes, fuck those. CDs are where it's at, you know. And I stacked CDs everywhere as a young person. So for me, when tapes kind of started to kind of reappear, I was like, oh man, tapes, really? And then over time, you know, I think, you know, I started to warm up to it, and I started to realize, like, how great and how versatile they are, that you can, that I could sit with something like this as, like, a younger person, and then, you know, record something weird like Forms, or, you know, record even the other Antoni stuff, the Sacrifice Denied stuff is all done in a similar way. I just, you know, it's this.
I listened to that one today. Also,
it was this. There was just this sitting here, and then there's, like, a little amp, and then a few synths and a few loopers and pedals, and that was it. You know what I mean? And to have that, as sort of, like, part of the experience of listening to it, I think is really important. You know, even the tape hiss of Sacrifice Denied and the tapeists of Spectral Eminence. Like, you know, I want that to be purposely there. It's not that it's a bad recording. It's that it's part of the experience of listening to it, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And like, yeah, there's something about tapes and specifically instrumental music that there's just this unquestionable, like, I have like a false nostalgia when I listen to tapes or watch VHSs, but it's like, I guess I did grow up with VHSs. I didn't grow up with
tapes. Yeah.
But just that, like, you just can't capture it. I don't know.
No, it's something, it's different, you know, it has its own sort of, you know, it's like the whole vinyl and CD thing. There is a difference, you know. I mean, whether that difference is like major now at this point, cause you know, a lot of the technology's catching up with records and stuff.
Yeah. Modern vinyl sound terrible, honestly.
Yeah. I know. So like not so much the, you know, the kind of like, you know, I bought my wife, I think I bought her like, Matthew, can't really talk about him anymore, but yeah. Or there was like a Beyonce album I bought her, I think. And, you know, Beyonce is great, but putting that on, like, versus, like, I was like, this doesn't do the album really justice. It came with a CD, and then we put the CD on, and that sounded like, and I was like, great. Well, like, is this just then an item to just have as, like, a Beyonce vinyl, you know?
That's exactly what I think it is. Because the I feel like it's the low end, specifically, that just gets destroyed when you...
Destroyed. Yeah.
And they also, they don't, there's no way they put a lot of work into mastering it again. Like,
no, I mean, they would have, like, yeah, I don't know. That's a great question. I, you know, the process of that, maybe, you know, somebody might have.
Dark Fantasy vinyl at one point. It was,
it sounded
terrible, man. Terrible.
Really?
Well, yeah, I'd listened to it so many times on an actual CD that it was like, you know.
That's too bad. Yeah. I haven't had too much of that. I feel like everything, the more extreme music, like death metal and all that kind of stuff sounds really great on vinyl. Like just the buzz sawiness of some of the, like, you know, guitar tones just stand out more, and the vocals stand. I don't know. Everything just sounds kind of. And then, I mean, you know, a friend of mine, they just did a death metal album on tape, and I was listening to it on tape, and it's like, oh, this is a really great format for death metal. This is like, now it'll like, why didn't I think of this before? Like, I should have been paying attention to the cassettes more now. And now I'm scouring Discogs, like, oh, it's only like $8.99 for this, you know, yeah, like, what am I doing spending $35, $40 on death metal vinyl?
Yeah.
Making myself broke.
Cassettes are, they're like cheap to manufacture. CDs are cheaper still to make.
Yeah. I mean, you know, researching that as well as a label, you know, so.
But I just don't want a CD. I don't know. I'd rather the cassette.
I think I felt the same way. Like the CDs were kind of like, whatever. And then I just started, like, you know, there's so many albums I want. Maybe they're not on cassette. And then on vinyl, they're $80 because they were pressed in 91 or something. And then they never got repressed.
Yeah.
But then there's, like, somebody's done a CD reissue. Or the CD from 91 is still dirt cheap. And so for me, it's like a format is a format. You know, and I understand why people wouldn't like CDs. Because it's maybe the same thing I experienced when I was, like, when tapes came back. I was like, oh, I don't want a tape. Yeah. Like, but now I'm like, oh, I want a tape. Yeah, definitely, 100%. Like, or a CD or a vinyl. Like, and, you know, maybe that'll change. Maybe just CDs will disappear. I mean, they are kind of, you know, it's not the greatest format, to be honest with you.
Yeah, they're pretty wasteful, too. Like, you can't, the way that they have DRM on them or whatever you call it, digital rights management, you can't burn on a CD again unless you're an hacker. If you've done it through iTunes.
Yeah,
not gonna happen.
Yeah, so it's just, it's kind of there. I mean, I think there's something kind of cool about the form, like the format of, like, you know, I'm just grabbing a CD for example, like having this as a format of, like, opening it up. I think there's something kind of cool about that in the disc itself, but the process of, like, how scratched it can get and whatnot is kind of like, that sucks. You know, you can't really do too much about it, but vinyl you can't do too much about it either if it gets scratched. So
yeah, that's true. What are your feelings about, like, streaming services and such? I have a very mixed relationship with it. I love it for a lot of reasons, but it's also fucking terrible. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone should have sort of mixed feelings over it because, you know, Spotify I use all the time. I pay for, you know, we pay for the family plan. My wife and I have separate accounts. It has a lot of pretty weird stuff on it. Like, it does, there's a lot of people who are throwing up their material, like, you know, on Spotify, just, you know, even noise albums. And I'm surprised people put their noise stuff, but it's awesome that they do.
It's not cheap to do it, man. There's no cheap way to do it.
I don't know if there's like some other way they're finding to do that, or they're, you know, I don't know. Cause I threw up the Roaring Him stuff on Spotify. Cause like, this is maybe the most somewhat accessible stuff to human beings. Mm-hmm. And I was like $17 a year or something. No, more than that, $54 a year or something, like for three songs. Like,
yeah.
Why
do I have, what did you, do you know what you used? DistroKid?
One of those like CD Kid or one of those, I can't remember the name of it for the life. I barely logged on to the site.
Yeah.
At first I was like, okay, there's a few people listening. Great. And I just like forgot about it.
But it's all spread, like, great. It's all spread out across all these streaming services or whatever.
Yeah. There's all these little ones you pay X amount a year or whatever.
Yeah. So I don't look. I make a point of not looking at my stats. I can't do it.
No. You'll really just kind of get weird if you look at it, your stats too much. And
yeah.
But, you know, streaming, I think, you know, it's going to be, I honestly think it's kind of like, at one point, it's just maybe going to be streaming at some point down the road. Like, I mean, sadly, it's an inevitability.
For sure.
You know, I think physical will always be around. I think it'll be really, you know, niche physical kind of thing. And that's not something I hope for. That's just something I see coming. Like, it's just, it's sort of a kind of an inevitability in some ways. But, you know, if it's done in a way that's a little bit more, you know, ethical for artists, I think that's, you know, you're not making too much money off of like what, a million streams. Like,
no, you're not.
Was it the like CCR, or I can't remember what band it was, but the guy that came to, you know, some courtroom and talked about it. He's like, I made like $5 off a million streams. And you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Why is it like that? I don't know. And then I think there was that thing with the owner of Spotify even being like, well, you need to continually put out new material on these.
Yeah.
It's like, are you gamifying? Well, it's like, it's gamifying art and music. Like, it's just, it's turning into like, oh no, you have to put the quarter in at this time and then you have to press the trigger. It's like, no, man, that's not how it works. Like, it's not like, you know, there is business to music and what you're doing, but there's also the fact that it doesn't work in the way you want it to work. You know what I mean? Like, you can't force it. You can't do that, or else you, I don't know what you end up with, but
yeah, because no matter what, like with any art form, time will always win, not the game, not the gamifying, right? Like, great records will live forever. I don't know, that's very cheesy, but it is.
Yeah, I mean, and it'll, you know, it's great records live forever, and then, you know, you take a look at My Dad's Sussex by Bent Wind, and it's like, that took a while for that to live. So, you know what I mean? Like, I think when that came out, no one really cared. Like, it was just like, okay, here's the dollar bin. But now it's like, over these years, because of like the hype that I got, and it wasn't pressed on any other format, and, you know, it wasn't streaming anywhere at the time. You know, it's 1982 and a CD version came out and people were clamoring to get that, and they did a repress, but the repress, you know, isn't worth the same. And it's different. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, I don't know if we'll see that anymore. Cause you won't be able to lose music really anymore. If you put it online, it's just there for almost forever unless you delete it.
Yeah. You know? But the deleting it thing is what I think is actually interesting. Cause you might get these great records that have, you know, like, imagine, I don't know what your numbers are and I don't really care, but like, imagine what me and you do, like relatively limited audience. One day I might be like, I want to be a school teacher. I should probably pull this off the internet. And maybe there's 10 people that remember it. And then but I pull it because I want to protect my name or something. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think the archivalist thing will always be there, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good point. But I think also at the same time, like, you know, we're entering such a world where, like, you know, I work for a hospital and I have like tattoos on my arms. It's going to get to the point where, okay, you played a noise record in your like 20s.
Nobody gives a shit. Yeah.
Everyone's going to be like, oh yeah, you did that too. I did it too. You know, like, it's going to be.
Yeah. You got to think there's a SoundCloud rapper right now who's like a social worker, you know?
Sorry?
You got to think that there's like a SoundCloud rapper that's like a social worker, like right now. Well, or something,
You know, I have a bachelor's in social work and I work in psychiatry doing mental health work, so it's like, you know, and I'm making some pretty weird boundary pushing out of the way music, right? You know, so Yeah, of course there's going to be a SoundCloud rapper, social worker out there. Yeah. Actually, you know what? My friend, my buddy Josh, he's like a DJ. He does like dubstep kind of stuff. He works with youth and stuff like that. He works with, you know, sort of youth outreach sort of stuff. So yeah, there you go. There you go.
I think that's a good world. That's a world I want to live in.
Sorry?
That's a world I want to live in, for sure.
Yeah, I think it's already here. Like, I think there's a lot of people who, you know, have these sort of, like, straight jobs. And then, you know, I was talking to a coworker, actually. He's a psych nurse. And his brother has, like, a PhD or something that plays in a band. And everybody else in the band that he's in also has a PhD. And they're like, we don't want anyone without a PhD because you don't have enough money to pay for the gear that we need to sound the way we want to sound. Yeah. I just thought that was so, like, okay. That's bizarre. Like, I mean, it sounds a bit dickish, but I understand it. I understand it. It's totally like, you know, I get it. I totally get it. You know, I mean, at first I was like, really? I was like, okay, you know, it actually makes sense. You know,
what do they have PhDs in?
I don't know. I didn't ask, okay. But yeah. they're making the money. Like that was the whole thing. We got PhDs. So we make probably doctors. I don't know. But yeah. I mean, it makes sense. You know, if you're if you have a certain thing in your mind and you want it to sound a certain way, why not? You know?
I don't know, but I also argue, fuck it. Who cares what it sounds like?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's like, you know, I try to give everything a fair shake and try not, you know, if people want that sort of like certain sounds that, you know, I don't find appealing, I don't think it's anything wrong with that. That's their, you know, their prerogative. And I think, you know, go do it, like do it. That's awesome. Like, you know, there's no reason not to. Like you only live once kind of thing, YOLO or whatever. Yeah. And, but like, just do, like, if you want that clean, sterile sound, why not? Like it's you and you love that. You know, I love a recording that sounds like a TV being turned up and down, like through a distortion pedal. I mean, it's just personal preference. And I mean, you know, I don't have to listen to very sterile music. Maybe I can pop into it once in a while. It's fine. You know, and just, it, you know, it's all experience. It's all somebody's, you know, ideas that pop out that didn't, you know, come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Even if it is sterile, you know.
The idea of, I guess, sterile too is like very subjective based on what you found challenging throughout your life.
Big time with
media you've consumed, right? Because
I
find watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians challenging. Someone else might find watching Twin Peaks season 3 very challenging or something.
Very challenging.
That's a pretentious as fuck thing to say, but
and you can take so much from really like simple things that we all kind of write off really quickly. Like even Keeping Up with the Kardashians, like, you know, you watch it, but like, what is the underlying kind of message about what's going on in the show? Why is this show popular? How did these people get this much money? What, you know, you can kind of take a lot from things, I think, even if you have this sort of like opposition to them. And I find, like, as somebody who does like weird music and noise music and, you know, out there metal, I think, and it's not always the case for people in this sort of scene, but I find that like other things can, I can kind of even like understand things that people hate. Hey, like, it's kind of like, oh, I understand, you know, like people really hate there's the new Danzig album, the Danzig Sings Elvis. And people just don't like it, but I love it. I think it's great. I think it sounds really like, it sounds so bleak and so like, there's something so like end of the road of like, you know, this sort of mournful sounding, you know, I love Danzig and I love all his work. I think he's like amazing, but there's something like just bleak about it. And that quality makes me want to listen to it more, and people just shit all over it. You know, they're like, it's terrible. Like, you shouldn't have done it. Yeah. But I'm like, no, you should have done it. It's awesome. I think it's great. You gotta like, let it settle for a bit and you're gonna find something maybe in it in the long run, you know, even like, you know, Keeping Up with the Kardashians, maybe you'll find something in it in the long run that, you know, it's not.
I actually do kind of like it. That's why I'm just full of shit.
Well, yeah, we wouldn't be talking about it if it didn't have some sort of weird presence in our, like, you know, cultural psyche, right? And it's weird to admit that because we all want to pretend like, oh, screw, you know, it's so, you know, superficial and this and that, whatever, but.
You don't get it's anywhere still, thinking like that, though. You don't learn anything. Sorry? You don't learn anything when you think like that, right?
Yeah, I think you just need to approach it and just kind of, you know, take it for what it is. And, like, if you can pull something from it, that's good. If you can't, just move on. Focus on, you know, what you're interested in. I don't, you know, I think, you know, in my 20s, I, you know, would tear a lot of things down. Like, oh, screw this, screw that. And now I'm like, I don't need to do that. It's somebody doing their thing. I got to focus on what I've got to do.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. The best piece of advice anyone ever gave me was when I first started playing shows in Victoria, as you do, I befriended Andy Anderson of Cavity.
Man.
Beautiful man. Yeah, for real. Yeah. And he said to me, he was like, he wasn't even giving me advice. He just said this. He's like, yeah, I find young bands are very competitive and at each other's throats for no reason and end up kind of burning out for that reason. And
yeah,
I took that as a, hey, JP, don't do that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I was taking that to heart.
That's a great piece of advice. I think you're all there together. There's no sense in like, and I don't think I ever felt that when I was doing music in Victoria. Like, I never really, maybe it was other people thought that. I don't know about, you know, any band I was in. I don't know. I always feel like everyone was really connected and very supportive and like very, like everyone was there for each other. And I remember there was a band that came, some straight edge band from somewhere in the States came up to play a show at the Troiler. And the main vocalist, you know, and I'm not really a big straight edge hardcore fan, like I respect it, was like looking in the crowd during this house show and was like, you know, this is really unique that I'm seeing a room full of like metalheads, punks, straight edge guys, you know, some like guys with like board shorts and like a sideways hat, you know. Yeah. He said like, this is weird, this doesn't happen like where we come from, like this isn't, it's normally just like hardcore kids. But it was like everyone was there because it was just, you know, live music and we all want to support it. And it didn't matter. And that's something about Victoria that I found really unique is that I think the genre, like kind of like lines were always a bit blurred. I don't think people really, you know, maybe there were some exceptions, obviously, but there was like a lot of people just supporting each other because it was creating something in Victoria.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, people would show up for each other, show up for shows and, yeah, it's a really unique thing. I don't think, you know, I am going to a ton of shows in Vancouver. I mean, to a few since I moved in 2017. I can't make a judgment on that. But, you know, I think for Victoria, that's something that's unique, you know. Or I don't know if it's the same now or not, but.
I don't know. There hasn't been a show in a long time. And
yeah, I mean,
I didn't go to shows for a while just out of, I don't know. I just didn't like going to bars, period.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, it's not, I get that. Like, it can be a bit, I don't know, overwhelming at a bar and stuff like that. I mean, like I, you know, years ago I was like, I never want to play a bar show. I don't want to do all these shows or house shows. And now like I could do anything. Like I would love to play a bar show. Bar shows are great for a different reason than house shows or, you know, all ages shows. Yeah, they're fine, but you know, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. The all ages shows, I've always found it depends. It depends a lot. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
There's the ones at the Rat. You ever play at the Rat Shack?
No, I never did. No.
You never did? Okay.
I always wanted to. So, but
yeah.
No, I never
that was did. A bit, could get to be a bit mayhemic with the sort of, because it is all ages, but it's also, there's a smoking room.
Yeah. 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 I remember like even like James Bay Community Center though, like, I don't know, that hasn't had shows in ages and ages. You never went to any shows there?
I played there.
Oh, you did. Was it the bigger gym or the smaller?
It was the small gym. Yeah, it was the Gary Cassettes anniversary show. I think Troy and Morgan put it together. 3.5 years ago, 4 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
2018, maybe.
Okay. Oh wow. Okay, I'm glad that still became a venue. That's awesome, actually. Like, because I just thought it was just gone, like forever, just not.
I think it was finagled through CFUV. To be totally.
Oh, okay. Because I remember like one of the like. I think one of the shows there, it was like some band played and teenagers showed up and they got caught in the bathroom smoking weed or something drinking or making out or something. And then the whole thing got just shut down or whatever. And like, you saw that like, sort of like everyone's trying to be respectful, but then there's just this contingent of people who are there to kind of like be too much and taking out their frustrations on a venue at a show where it's like, well, we're here to appreciate the music, not destroy things, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
And I like to get drunk as much as the next guy. I'm drinking Bud Light right now, but
yeah, I'm drinking a nice cider myself. So.
Nice. Yeah. I was curious. So one of the records that you released, or I guess re-released, whose was it again? It was,
Zothraqua?
That... Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I wrote down, how do you pronounce this?
My notes here. Yeah. Zothiqua.
Yeah. What's the mastering process for you? Because I exclusively know mastering through Ableton presets and a couple of VSTs that I've bought over the years.
Yeah, that's.
And I just drag it on and change the compression a bit. And
I sit with like another speaker, and I sit with like headphones, so I kind of listen between the two, and I kind of do different mixes, and I sit around and listen to those more. Like, do these feel right? Do these, you know, muddy up something? And like, you know, I don't think the two mixes are insanely different, but they are different enough that I think it makes it to me a difference. I think it sounds a little bit more like there's a bit more room and stuff like that. And that's a record that like I would have ultimately like to go back and actually mix. But the program I used to record that isn't Ableton. It's a different, it was like Magic Music Maker, Magic X, something or other.
Came with my
laptop, and like I was like, oh, I could do this, and I sat around doing it, and it was like kind of like you feel the computer shaking as the memory was trying to like master it down, and like, okay. So I mean, it just leave it as it is, and you know, I kind of put the mastering moves on it, you know. And I'm doing some other mastering for a couple of other things I'm putting out through the label, that not my own stuff, and that is, you know, as time progresses, I'm starting to like understand it better. So it was like good to practice on my own stuff.
Yeah.
Like, even the Roaring Him stuff, I remastered that a second time. I didn't really announce it or anything, but I remastered it a second time, put it up. Replace the files on Bandcamp, and the ones on, you know, Spotify are the ones that are on Spotify, but kind of trying to train my ear of like what needs to be, you know, put where, what needs a bit more space and kind of stuff like that. You know, it's so DIY, and I watch a few videos, but even then it's like, you know, I get a bit like, okay, I just want to try this and just find my own process in it, you know. And I'd love to take some courses or something to really get in there, but it's, you know, right now it's the pandemic, so I'm going to try my best. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of rewarding. Maybe people hate the mastering process that I've put it through. I don't know. It's a tricky game, you know?
Yeah. I've only recently learned the value of mastering, to be honest.
Yeah. It's just having that overall, like, you have that overall sort of, like, feel of everything. And I'm like, yeah, it has to sound, like, in certain mediums, too. It's like, I'm learning about that as well, like, yet mastering for a different medium is kind of, that's a challenge. Like CD mastering versus tape mastering versus vinyl mastering.
Yeah. I didn't know that when I made my first tape, man. I did it through duplication, right?
Yeah.
I want it right here. And it sounds so bad, fucking bad. I just made it into two waves, right? That's all I did. And just sent it off. Orange fucking this guy here.
It's
from 2015. I have 40 of them in my closet. I left them in a house for like years, and I forgot.
Oh, wow. Holy moly.
It was one of those just kind of like I was drunk and ordered it online. You know.
That's awesome. That's a good story. Just finding tapes that you pressed that you forgot.
Yeah, years. They were lost for years, and I got them back.
And you know what? You should put that out. That's a cool story.
Maybe I should, yeah. And they're orange,
like,
man.
That's like the form. Yeah, that's like forms. Like I found the tape, and then I ran it through a bunch of pedals, and then I put it out. Like, you know.
Do you find that relationship with like your older music? Sometimes you go, there'll be a small waiting period, and you're like, I never want to hear that shit again. And then you go, you wait even longer, and then you're like, damn, okay, I want to get back to this or something. Like, do you find that it changes your relationship with your own work?
No, I feel like everything I've done, I'm proud of. Like, I don't think I've ever sat back and like listened to something that I've done that's being released, and being like, you know, even when it was like, I don't think so. I find, you know, there's always going to be, you're going to listen to, oh, I could have done this better, I could have done that better. That was for a long time, my relationship. Feeling sort of just like I could have done this better, but I still like listening to this. But now it's like, no, this is really, really cool that it was amazing that I even got to do this, that I even got to like record something and put it out. Like, not a lot of people do this. Not everybody knows how this works. And it's, to me, it's like a sort of journey as well into my past, where it's like I can't deny, you know, sort of the steps of like my musical journey. I don't think that's a, I think I maybe at some point all will come to, you'll come to like, be like, okay, it makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, okay, this is all part of the same thing. You know what I mean? The first show I ever played, recorded, you know, sounds horrible, but you know, it's part of the journey and there's something special about it. You know, it's going back to that. You got to find something in it that has something that can speak to you. Like, I think that, you know, I think anyone can do that with anything, you know? Yeah. I found, actually my dad, when he passed, we had to clear out his place. And, I found a tape that he made, where it was Mitochondrion playing at Logan's Bar. And I want to say it's like 2004. Okay. And it's like, I was like, oh my God, like, or 2005, maybe even like, can I, like, do I want to put this on? This is like early days of the band. Like we were a very different band. Like that was a very different band at that time. And I put it on and it's just neat to listen to. Like I thought I was going to feel weird about it, but it's like, and you know, I'm not in the band anymore even. And it's like, this sounds really cool. And I sent it to Nick and Sean and they were like, this is weird. Like, this is weird to hear. Like, this is such a, it's a total, it's like, it's less of like a, there's no embarrassment. It's like, this is a bookmark in the history of like that band and all of our creative processes, you know? So I think for me, it's like, it sounds awesome. Like, I think it's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And with the advent of the internet too, it's like, it's very beautiful how easily you can go, oh yeah, you know, and I did put my first show on YouTube or someone else.
Yeah.
Here it is. You know?
Oh yeah.
Cause I have that at least, like my first show is on YouTube.
Oh really?
Yeah. Yeah. I've never.
How old were you when it was, when you played? Or?
17.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. That's really like my first show was, I was like maybe 19 or 18, maybe.
Maybe I was 18. Okay. Maybe Sorry? I was 18. I think I might've been 18 during my first show.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was loud.
Yeah.
That's what I remember. It was loud.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if my first show was like, I think it was an all ages show actually, and I was probably 18. And then the second one was actually a bar show, and I was underage, I think.
Yeah, at the time I got away with a few of those because my band members were quite a bit older than me.
A bit older. Oh yeah, that's kind of funny.
Snuck me in.
Yeah, I think you know, I definitely had my first like underage beer at a bar. And they're like, this is gonna and that sticks in my memory having that first beer too. It's like that's. Yeah, and it's something special. That was a special moment, you know. You're like, oh man, like I'm here. This is it. Yeah.
Yeah, I hate to be honest with you. Like the magic of playing a live show, I lost at a certain.
Yeah.
Place. Yeah.
I really. Did,
yeah. Do you still have like? Is you still find it exciting?
Yeah. I find it like it's out of everything in a band that I like playing live the most. I think that for me is the best part of being in a band. And there's just something so like jamming is great, you know, and you're playing live when you're jamming, but like having this moment of like, you have to find yourself in this sort of milieu of like, there's all these people looking at me. There's, you know, maybe there's lights, maybe there's not. I'm on stage. I'm kind of, everyone's focused on you. And, you know, for the longest time, you know, I get like the sweats, but then I also get the excitement, but then I also, I feel like I oscillate a lot.
Yeah.
But sure. That makes me want to do it more. Like it like that sort of like you're, you know, like David Bowie had that quote about like, you're going to a point where you feel just out of your element and that's where it's right. You know what I mean? I think there was some sort of, you know, that quote, it's like, that's how I feel every single time I go play live. Like I do feel a bit out of my element, but I also feel like that makes things more dangerous and more interesting and more engaging and more, it makes me want to do my best. You know what I mean? I think the last show I even played was a Roaring Hymn show, like the only Roaring Hymn show that's happened with my wife, Teresa, on keyboards and me, guitar and vocals. Is a different set of songs than what's out there. But it was like, it wasn't a ton of people. It was like 5-6 people that I, and then some people I knew from the other bands, but then I loved it. I forgot about like, and it was such a new experience because I was used to being in metal bands where I'm like either screaming or playing bass or whatever. And it was like this totally different process of like just feeling so empowered to be like, wow, this is so different. This is a new thing for me. And like, no, I love it. I miss playing live shows a lot. I wish I could do more.
Yeah. I'd like to try again, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I stopped getting nervous, and that makes me.
You stopped getting nervous.
Yeah, completely. To be honest, yeah, there was.
Oh,
I lost my nerves, and it's not exciting then. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I started playing solo about two years ago. I was like, I don't need to put together a band. The bureaucratic nature of trying to put together a band really was hard for me.
I think it's hard for a lot of people.
Yeah. Because you know? I've never had a formal prep school girl. It was always like, improv-y noise kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. Just, I guess maybe it's just the laptop, man. I was using a laptop for a lot of shows, and I was sitting behind a laptop for a lot of shows. But I had instruments, but they were plugged into my laptop. And I lost. There's something about my computer being there that just fucking makes me unable to find the presentness. I don't know.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. Huh. Do you find that you're jamming then? Is that, how do you feel about that? Is that sort of a similar
experience? When I'm jamming?
Yeah.
I love jamming.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find it heavenly. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Heavenly. But then like transferring that to live, it's just like, it becomes like you're going through the motions sort of thing. Like, is that how it feels?
I'm just sitting in front of a laptop. Like I'm concerned that I've gone over time. Those are the things running through my head, you know, or I'm concerned that I didn't play long enough. I'm worried that the sounds that I've picked don't suit the next artist.
Okay.
You know, am I being judged that I have a pint of beer on stage with me, you know, whatever, you know, I don't know. I got into that. I don't know why I'm talking about myself so much. Sorry. But
no, it's fine. I think it's, you know, it's good to like have this in this dialogue of like us talking about, you know, our processes, and it's good for me to kind of learn more about your process too. I think that
The live show is, it's such a difficult thing to pin down, like what you feel while you're there, you know?
Yeah.
It's
a lot of energy. It's a lot of different, just kind of, you know, I'm not trying to be like, you know, I don't know how to explain. It's unexplainable in some ways where you can't really put a finger on how you feel. It's just this sort of like, you're nervous, but I'm also not nervous because I know what I'm doing, but also it's unpredictable. But then there's also all my friends here, but then there's also people I don't know.
Yeah.
It begins to kind of like, you know, when I played kind of the first shows outside of Victoria, that was when things became like a little more like, a little bit more, I don't know how to explain, like mitochondria, and played in Vancouver and there was like nobody we knew in the audience. And that was like, you know, I don't really remember it. I think it was kind of drunk, but I think we played well. It was a long time ago. And then, you know, Amnesian played Sled Island, and like, there's a few people I knew that were there, but there was mostly faces of, you know, these people are from just Calgary. And it was like, it was something else. Like it was just a different feeling. And I think I felt less nervous then.
Me too. When I played Sled Island, I weirdly felt not nervous. I was like, hey, you guys want to see what we got? The curator said yes. All right, we'll give it to you. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Like, those were some of the best shows ever, man.
It's like, they don't have any contacts for like, you know, whatever. And there's your safety net of like looking out there is not there. So you're just like, okay, I just got to go with it. I got to pretend like they're there maybe or something. But I found those to be like some of the best. Like, I think that felt, there was something really special, I don't know, about playing in front of just like a place where there's like no one, you know.
Yeah.
And Victoria can be like, you know, you play at the 50-50 or something, and it's like, well, your friend's in the front row. So it's like, okay, like, what's up, you know?
Maybe that's what made it lose the magic, was some of that, perhaps, was like, because it would be like, oh, yeah, okay, my girlfriend's now, because like I've had the same girlfriend for the last, I guess, 3 and a bit years. It's like, okay, she's there, my brother's there. A couple other friends that always show up are there. They are 20% of the audience. You know what I mean? Like, where it's like, they already know what I'm going to do.
Yeah. And you're like, I'm not going to, you're like, am I going to impress them?
Yeah. Well, nothing I can do will surprise them, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's sort of like, you know, you push yourself into that sort of safety zone, and then maybe it's that safety, you know what I mean? It's like, but then how do you get out of that sort of level of like safety in Victoria in some ways? Like, that's,
it's
it is so small. Yeah, it's small. It really is. Yeah. And you know. But no, I definitely think, live, I miss it more than anything. Like, I miss even just like, obviously we all probably miss going to shows. Like,
I miss going to shows.
Yeah.
I'm excited to Vancouver, and hopefully shows start back up. And
I think there's like
experimental music that's totally fresh to me. So exciting.
Yeah. I mean, there's gonna be I think like people are kind of already kind of planning stuff amidst people I know and stuff like that to try to
for like mid-June? Is that what people are thinking?
Even, like, later in the year. But, like, it's, like, I, you know, as much as I'm, like, stoked to hear that, I'm, like, oh, God, like, it's, I if it doesn't work out, I'm not going to be, like, sad. Because it's, like, we know what we're in. Like,
yeah,
it's, like, we've, you know, had that last year where it's, like, I had tickets to some bigger shows. And then I, you know, got the refund from Ticketmaster. And,
yeah,
you know, I had a few of all these things I canceled. So it's, like, I'm hopeful, but I'm also trying to be realistic in my head of, like, things could get ugly again. And then we have to cancel everything. So
yeah, I think we're all like we're all there for the most.
I mean, it's kind of like, obvious, but you know. Yeah.
So what's the plan with the label? What are you thinking going forward?
Well, yeah, I've got, you know, I just kind of put up the two posts about Death in Slow Motion, and the post about Midden. So getting their material out is kind of the next thing, and then, you know, the Harm Signals tape. And I'm also now doing a split CDR for him and another noise artist. So getting those out within the year. And then there's a couple of other artists that I am going to really, like, try to get their stuff out this year. I think it'll work. And then my own stuff, too, where it's like I have another Zothiqua album kind of almost in the bag, but sort of not sort of. And then Roaring Him, like, kind of sort of a full-length sort of thing. And then if I feel like doing any Antoni stuff, I probably will put that on the back burner for a little bit until the new year. But, it, you know, it's a lot of things just to keep myself kind of occupied, because I find, I'm just trying to think, like, what do I do during the pandemic? It's like, well, this is now what I'm doing. You know, like, I mean, it's whether or not it's going to, you know, be super successful, I don't know, but it's definitely occupying my time. And I feel like, you know, it's, you know, I'm not the most organized person in the world, and it's kind of forcing me to be a bit more organized, and because it has, like, sort of like a very concrete goal, and that's something that means so much to me, you know. So, and I mean, like, just continuing forward and putting out what I can when I can. Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of goal. And if the label can, you know, if the releases can start just paying for themselves, you know, I'm not going to go and quit my job. I want to go back to school. I want to go get my master's and, you know, become, do all, you know, all this stuff with, you know, my line of work. And so as long as it's something that I can, like, you know, kind of maybe, you know, once in a while put, like, you know, 100 or 200 bucks of my own money here and there in, that would be great to keep it afloat. But I don't know. I honestly don't know if that'll happen. That, it might blow up tomorrow. Like, you know,
who knows? Yeah.
Yeah. It's not, you got to just be, take it one day at a time for now and try your best to plan it out, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a very, like, important thing. I wish somebody told me that when I was younger too, was, that, like, you can also have a job. Like, you can also pursue, like, a pseudo real career.
Yeah.
The other stuff has to stop.
No, not at all. And not, I think, like, I never really had that in my head. Like, it was always like, well, I need to find what I want to do other than that I can, you know, supplant this sort of, cause I knew, like, you know, I'm death metal band and grindcore band and, you know, these aren't, they're not paying the bills of those. Like, that's obvious. Like, you're not, it's, and very few people can, and some people have, and that's, and it's not to say it's not possible, but it's fewer than far between than even the people who are able to do that, like, mainstream music or whatever. Right. So it's like, you know, everyone, I think, kind of knows that, you know, like the singer of, like, At the Gates is a school teacher, like, in, I guess, Sweden.
Really?
He's like, yeah, he, like, teaches, like, high school. Okay. He teaches, like, high school social work or social studies. And it's, yeah, like,
and that's a band, yeah, that has, there's a million people that have that shirt.
Yeah. There's a, for, yeah, sure. I saw them here with, I think it was with, who was it with? Behemoth. And it was, like, okay, flooded. Okay. Like, I think a lot of people came for At the Gates. And I like Behemoth. I do like At the Gates, but it was, like, I think
more, I like, people, I like Behemoth more than I like At the Gates, personally.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I kind of had, like, I kind of wrote off at the Gates for a little bit, and I shouldn't have, like, what is it? Slaughter of the Soul. Like, that was a really big album, like, for a lot of people in,
oh yeah,
like, when I was in high school and then, like, after high school, and I liked it a lot, and then I just burned out on it of, like, cause then you'd hear, like, 30 bands that sound exactly the same. And, you know, it you know, like, and it just became a bit like, he yells go at one point, and you're like,
yeah.
Like, I mean, for me, that part aged kind of poorly. Like, go, and you're like,
yeah. Like, reminds me, yeah, of, like, Refused. I feel kind of the same way about it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, did you?
I love the Refused, but.
Yeah, did you go to the reunion show? Were you able?
No, I tried to get. I did try to get tickets though, and I failed.
Yeah. I went. It was good. It was actually a lot of fun. And then I felt like the band kind of like.
They just kind of. They did another album, right?
Yeah, and it was like.
Yeah, I must have listened to it, and it must have not made an impression.
I think, you know, times change. You know, whether or not, like, can I scream? You know.
Yeah.
Is like a commentary on them in the future. I don't know. Like, yeah, I don't know. It just, I mean, good for them though. Like, I mean, I'm not going to hate on it. Like, that's not fair. Like, you know, good that they still keep it going. I think that's cool. That's gotta respect that.
What was your shit growing up? What were the like early ish, like eureka moments with more esoteric music? Because everybody always, it's like, oh yeah, the Beatles, yeah. Whatever, Rolling Stones, or with the people from hip hop I've talked to, it's always like, you know, Kanye, Gucci Mane.
Yeah. You know, so in high school, I think, I think the first kind of like weirder kind of, and it's not even weird, was like, you know, I was the age where like nu metal was coming out.
Okay.
And then like I heard, there was a radio station, 107.7 The End in Seattle. And they played a lot of like, you know, alternative stuff and all that kind of stuff. Like at the time, Victoria didn't have an alternative music station. It was like The Q and a couple of others. And I used to tune into that. And I think, you know, at the time, you know, I was grade 7. And I heard Korn. And
yeah,
at the time, it's like that distorted guitar. Because I heard like Smashing Pumpkins. And I really liked Smashing Pumpkins. And I was like, oh,
Smashing Pumpkins, they rock, man. That's a great
part. Like the guitar tone on Melancholy and Infinite Sadness is like, and even, yeah, and even before that with like, you know, Siamese Dream, those guitar tones are just so great. But then I heard Korn, I was like, oh my God, that distortion is so amazing. Like, I have to get into this. And, you know, I don't have any frame of reference. I'm a kid essentially trying to find, you know, what is the most weird out there thing. It just made sense to me. I was always into like ghost stories and haunted houses and creepy movies and stuff. And so it's like, well, this makes sense. This is cool. And my dad's in this cool, like psych rock band of like, so it all kind of like tied together where, you know, yeah, he was playing AC/DC for me and Hendrix. So it's like, well, of course I'm going to go and hear something on the radio that's like tuned to B and it's distorted. And
yeah.
And so like, you know, I don't listen to Korn now at all. I can't. It's just awful. Yeah. In my opinion.
They have some good songs still, man. I got like, some of those songs are.
Ooh. I mean, I can't. It's just, it's too, I feel like for me, it's like, I understand why people like it, but I'm at the point where it's like, I think I liked it because that was what was present and that was what was, I was like there. If I had heard something heavier or as heavy as Korn at the time, it probably would have, you know, it would have taken off. And it was, I had no, you know, there's no internet. There's no way to hear music other than the radio at that time. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, you could go, you went to HMV and you just like picked up a CD. I guess I'll listen to this. Like, I don't know what this sounds like. And so like, that was like, you know, kind of getting into the weirder music. And then, you know, I had all these nu metal CDs and my cousin moved in with my dad from Toronto. And he's like, what are these bands? These suck. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, what did he say? He's like, you got to pick up a Napalm Death album. And I was like, I don't know what that is. And so I went to Lyle's place and that, cause that was like, there was nowhere else you went at that time. This is like 2000 and, oh guys, this is probably not even two. This is like 1999. We're talking maybe even.
Was it the same location in 1999?
Like, sorry?
Was it in the same place in 1999?
Yeah. So yeah. I think it's, or this is like 98 or 99.
Okay.
And I think I bought Fear, Emptiness. Yeah, it was Fear, Emptiness, Despair by Napalm Death. One of the later like 90s, kind of like, you know, it's more like modern death metal, less of the older kind of grindcore.
Grindy, yeah.
Yeah, it's more, and I put that on and I was like, what the fuck? Like, I think I sort of like understood the concept of it at the time. And I was just like, I didn't know how to handle it. And then I just started listening to it more. And then all the nu metal CDs were gone. And then it was like, who is it? Somebody was like, you got to check out Cannibal Corpse. And I bought The Bleeding, actually, was the first Cannibal Corpse album I bought. And then it was like Morbid Angel. I heard Morbid Angel. And then it was just like these.
That was a big one for me, was Morbid Angel.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Covenant. Like that, you know, if Sean from Mitochondrion has the Covenant, like this sort of like festival that they do and like the, sort of label. It's called Covenant because of, you know, that album, like, essentially, you know, it's such a, you know, I know for him and for myself, that was like, we both heard that and we're like, what the fuck? Like, who, how do you do that? Like, who are these guys? Like, you know,
and I didn't even make a guitar sound thing, like that. That was what I thought when I first heard them. I was like,
well, yeah. And it's like, we, you know, that came out, oh God, like we were like, we wouldn't have known what to do with that when it came out and we heard it years later. You know what I mean?
What year what year? They're early 90s, right? That's,
well, they, like 80s too. Like they were, 80s, okay. They kind of had the abominations of, abominations of something or other. I can't remember the name, but they had that album. It came out before Altars of Madness. And, so they were around for, you know, a long time, but then, you know, they did Altars of Madness as like their kind of pinnacle in that, you know, as its anniversary, I think it's like 30 something years, you know? Anyway, hearing that, like hearing Covenant, that was the first exposure. It was like, whoa. And then, you know, we started tuning into Loud on Much Music, and once in a while they'd play like a death metal band. Okay, well, what's this death metal band? Like, you know, Carcass, who's that? We've got to find out about Carcass, and we got to find out. And so that was my exposure. And then, like, you know, you go to, you were going to the bookstore and there was like Metal Maniacs, and that's like a long out of print, I guess now, magazine of like, you know, death and black metal and, you know, alternative metal and, you know, and NWO BHM kind of stuff as well. And that was another doorway of like, oh my God, you know what I mean? And then so on and so forth, you know, going down actually with Sean, going down to Seattle, because his dad lived there, and seeing like Cannibal Corpse live in high school, like, it felt like just like this is something that, like, you know, I own a Cannibal Corpse shirt and I'm in high school. Like, that's, these guys have the most extreme titles for songs and their album covers are like zombies butchering each other. Like, it was sort of like, there's no way I can not like this. This is like, this is the coolest. You know what I mean? So that was the big, like, sort of like, and then the ball kind of just went from there. Like, you know, I got, it's funny because I think I got into like death metal and all that kind of stuff before I really got into like punk or like hardcore or anything like that. It was like, that was sort of my first like subculture that I really identified with, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Morbid Angel, man. That's an awesome band. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, sorry to ramble. I tend to.
No, that's, I always want to know, just cause like, especially people who make relatively extreme music, I'm always like, it always starts somewhere.
It's always a great band. It was honestly my cousin who was just like, don't listen to new metal, listen to this. Like, and I thank him every day for that. That's and he also got me into Danzig too. And I love Danzig. So like, I think, you know, he was the one who was like, you gotta listen to Danzig as well. And I picked up the first album and stuff. And then,
yeah. So on. Do you know Ben Sloat? You know him?
Yeah.
He, me and him just pushed each other in high school to stay on the extreme tip. That's how we kind of got on.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay.
He was the metal guy and I was the like Sonic Youth side project guy, you know? And that was a good time. But the big one for me was Converge. Listen to Converge, who you opened for,
that was insane. A weird experience. Yeah, it was awesome. It was sort of like Amnesia had sort of like kind of fizzled and it wasn't a thing. And then I got the email from Simon being like, hey man, do you want to go open for Converge? And it's sort of like, is this a prank? Because this is like, when I started Amnesia, it was like, that's sort of the goal, like just to do that maybe at some point. That's,
yeah,
would be like my check mark of like, I've done that. I'm that's great. Like, that's sort of like a bucket, almost like a bucket list thing. So, Converge was another one where, like, in grade 11 or 12, I was supposed to go to a high school dance. And I had the money for it. Like, my parents gave me, like, you want to go to this dance? Here's the money. Yeah. You did your chores. And I had it for like $12 or something. And I walked into Ditch, the old location of Ditch. Around the corner from Curious Comics, and I was looking through the CDs, and then I saw the Converge. I saw Jane Doe there, and in an issue of Metal Maniacs, I remember reading a little bit about it. And like at the time, I was really just exclusively into death metal, but there was these dudes with like short hair, and like they're wearing like not wearing metal shirts. They're just kind of like these skinny kind of like guys, and I'm like, what is this? Like, is this a metal band? Like, I don't know what this sounds like. And I took it home, and like I bought it. I was like, I'm not going to the dance. I want to hear this. Like, I had this moment of like, should I go to the dance and dance? Like, no, I'm gonna buy this CD and take it home. I'll see you guys later. Ditched all my friends, went home, put it on, and it was like, I don't know if I knew what to do with it at first, because it was like, I know death metal, but this is different. Like, this is, you know, something completely, and then I just became obsessed with that band. Like, it just, like, yeah. And at, like, you know, at, that was a big turning point too. It was like, whoa, like, this is something else. Like, this is really fucking awesome. Like, you know, I still love death metal, but this, you know, you know, metallic hardcore, whatever you want to call it.
I don't know. I've never known what to call them.
I don't feel right calling them metalcore, because that infers a lot of, like, certain bands
and certain, like, certain types of vocals that they don't do when you.
They're just such a unique band. I think that, you know, I kind of just refer them as like a metal band. I don't know if that's the right thing, you know, like metal with hardcore influences, hardcore punk influences. Because, I mean, they do meld the two together. But I think, yeah, that was a big change. And, like, you know, and then finally seeing them, like, I think it was maybe, like, a decade later or so. Like, that was just, like, whew.
Yeah, I never got to see them. I was at Sled Island and could have gone to see them. And my bandmates were not into it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, opening for them, too. Like, I saw them three times, I think, before I opened for them. And we, like, went down to Seattle, and they had played there three times. I was like, I'll go. Fuck it. It's right there. Like, that's why not? They were playing with, they played with Coalesce, who were another one of my big time favorites. And that was amazing to see live. And then Converge played. I was like, whoa, this is something else, you know?
Yeah. It was the first time I'd listened to music and gone, nope. And that was like, cause I was a big, like, blog reader, and Jane Doe's a critically acclaimed record. So I put it on.
Yeah.
I had What CD. I don't know if that rings a bell to you.
Sorry.
I had What CD, which is like a
it sounds familiar.
Like, it's like a private music torrent tracker, but it's also like a form.
Yeah.
It's long gone now. But like I found Jane Doe on there, and I was like, all right, put it on. I was like, this is fucked. And I listen to like Slayer and stuff. And even then, I was like, this is too heavy for me. I can't do that. I had listened to Merzbow even, and I was like, no, I can't do this. And then the next day, like, I thought about it, and I was like, why did I have that reaction? Let's give this whole album a chance.
Yeah.
And that fucking, it completely changed the way I think about music. Like, completely. Yeah. Like, I was like, if you feel challenged, keep listening.
Keep listening. Yeah. That's a really good thing. Yeah. And I think it takes a while. Not everyone gets that too. Like, they might, I think it's, you know, you don't do yourself any favors by just kind of ignoring certain things, like ignoring music and not trying to understand it. You just don't.
Yeah. Well, and it's not like a movie. Like, if you go to the movie theater and see something challenging, like, you go, like, let's say, like, I don't know, you take someone to go see, like, a Tarkovsky movie or something, and they have no idea what it is, they're going to be, like, for at least half an hour, be like, what the fuck is this slow shit? What is going on?
What, yeah.
But they can't, you can't really leave the movie theater. You paid for your ticket. You're stuck there.
People do. I've seen people walk out of movies. Like, that's a...
Yeah, I've walked out of one movie in my life, but
really, what was that?
The first G.I. Joe movie I walked out.
Yeah, that's fair. I passed out during one movie, and I can't remember what it was. I was just not feeling it, and I was like, I'm going to sleep. And
I fell asleep during Cats also.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
I was really tired, though.
Oh god. Yeah, we watched that on we did like a Zoom watch of Cats, me and a bunch of friends, like last year, and it was just like, what happened?
It's fucked. It's something special, like,
and maybe we can find something, like, we can find the humor in it, like I was saying earlier, like, that's what we can find, that just the sheer absurdity and the ability to put it on, just laugh, like,
except hard. For the fact that it costs like $200 million, and it's
there you go
man, come on.
Yeah,
you could have fed a lot of people with that. You know,
you could have made a lot of like movies that were like, maybe
you could have made, like, 20 good artful movies.
You know, yeah. Small time directors, just give them carte blanche.
Yeah. You seen any good movies lately? That's my gimmick on this podcast, is when I run out of steam, my ass. You seen any good movies?
Lately? You know, so right now is Doxa, which is the Vancouver Film Festival. My wife used to work for them, and so we're watching a few films on that. We watched a documentary on, and I kind of posted about this, is, what is it, Polystyrene of X-Ray Specs. And X-Ray Specs were a band, like, a punk band that I knew about, and I'd heard growing up, like, because I had, you know, when I was in high school, I was probably, like, in the high school, and I was probably the only metalhead there. I don't think there was really many. There was one person, I think, when I was in grade 12 and grade 8, who was wearing like a Immortal shirt. And I was like, whoa, good.
Yeah.
And I was friends with a lot of punk people. And I think, they, you know, they must have put on X-ray specs because I knew the bondage up yours or whatever. And yeah, I was like, okay, I'd like to give this a shot because I don't really know anything about X-ray specs. I don't really know much about her life. And it was this very, very moving and also kind of like, for me, poignant for the experiences of my life, because it was, polystyrene was, you know, a person who suffered with bipolar disorder. And that was my dad as well. And she's a musician. My dad was a musician. So there was, you know, this very, and the film's made by her daughter. And it was just this like, whoa, this is a little bit like getting close to home in some ways. And, you know, the tangents of, you know, like her being, you know, like a woman in the punk scene was also present. And the fact she's biracial was present as well. But then it was also like the fact that like, this is something that my dad experienced. And I mean, this is, you know, some polystyrene who's like way bigger maybe and more influential than my dad's work, but it's still that, you know, that sort of current kind of really hit me. And that was really like, it was kind of really interesting to see. And you could, I feel like I could see her daughter almost like processing, you know, and her, you know, polystyrene has passed away. She had breast cancer and passed away. And I could see her, you know, my dad's passed away. So I could see her processing that. And for me, it was a bit of like, whoa, like, am I still processing, you know, my dad's death or whatever? So kind of a weird one. It was good. I mean, yeah
I recommend the undercurrent of mental health, family matters, and creativity, right?
Yeah.
And that's a complicated through thread when you put those together, for sure.
Oh, God. Yeah, it was definitely like, whoa, like kind of a little bit like,
really on the nose.
Yeah, but then I was like, oh my God, it got me thinking of being like, whoa, like this is kind of, you know, legacy and, you know, looking at who someone was and their the whole version of themselves and stuff, you know. That was really good. That was really good film. It's called I Am a Cliche, Polystyrene, something like that. I might have the title wrong. I apologize to anyone who's mad about that.
I'll correct it in the radio version.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
How about you? What have you seen recently that's good?
I'm a big film guy. I say this all the time when I do these interviews, but like, yeah, I try to watch a movie every day. I watched a movie recently called Blood Harvest, which is a horror film starring Tiny Tim.
How old is it?
It's like 30 years old. Yeah.
Okay, I'm writing this down.
I think you'll like it. It's on Tubi, which is a free streaming service that I've been really... There's a lot of like,
I've never used it, but yeah.
Yeah. They have deals with a bunch of like those people that re-release sort of like forgotten B movies.
Okay.
And so there's a huge archive of like, they don't have, you know, like trauma movies, you know, like Toxic Avenger and stuff. They have they don't have that stuff specifically, but anything like that is there.
That's awesome. I love that kind of stuff. My friends and I, during the pandemic, have taken to watching it, like not over Zoom, but we'll get together on Zoom before, watch the movie and text each other, making fun of them. Like just bad movies like that. Like what was the one we watched? Oh my God. It was a movie about like some sort of a baboon that gets let loose in a hospital and it has an experimental drug and starts killing people. I can't remember the name of it for the life of me, but it was just one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, okay, Blood Harvest, Tiny Tim, like that's gonna be.
Yeah, it's only 80 minutes too, and it's like,
okay, yeah,
it's just got a lot of it is just like him dressed up as a clown singing like Tiny Tim does.
Yeah,
and it's awesome. It's like super dated, like, but just fucking awesome. Yeah, I loved it. Today I watched do you know Lars von Trier?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so he's a problematic guy, but I don't know. I like his movies. And he did a TV show because I was curious about. I think I know. The Kingdom.
Yeah, right. Somebody recommended it to me a long time ago. Yeah,
it's awesome, man. It's like I was just like I wanted to watch something like Twin Peaks, and I remembered that
and it was Twin Peaksy. Okay.
Oh yeah, it ever? Yeah, like like a little bit too on the nose, but
okay.
Yeah, but
Did you watch the most recent season of Twin Peaks?
You better believe I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
what did you think of it?
I haven't watched it all the way through.
Okay.
Kind of like pacing myself on that. Like I watched the first episode, and I was like, okay, okay, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Where I find like experimental film and TV, like kind of be like, it's a little like, I like it, but it's also like, I got to be in the right frame of mind.
Definitely.
Whereas like experimental music, I can just throw it on kind of like I can throw a noise album on or whatever. That's a little different. But like the total immersion of like the visual and everything else is a little bit different for me. And I tend to be a little bit like, oh God, maybe I'm not smart enough to get this sometimes.
I feel the same way. My taste like, in movies leans more towards Liam Neeson, generally speaking, right?
Well, and as I said, like my friends and I watch these horrible movies, and it's just kind of like, you're just kind of watching them for laughs. Like you're kind of watching it for, and then, you know, there's movies my wife and I'll watch that are like, you know, serious, really well-made, you know, art films, which, you know, like I was, you know, medium into before, you know, we got together, but I've come more to appreciate now. But then also taking it to the other extreme of like, here's the a movie with a stuffed vampire that chases people down hallways and like blows out of it. Like, you know, I want both. I want to be able to oscillate between the two because they have something, they both will have something in it I can take from it.
Well, that's where I think like experimentality in film is a lot more, you know, there's various, there could be movies like Blood Harvest, for example. There's some experimental shit in that movie. Would someone call it an experimental film? No. But
it's
cheap and they had to do with what they had. Like they had to work with what they had. So therefore it is experimental. Yeah. How did they slit this guy's throat? That's experimental, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's a good point. Like we're like, even the actual like music where it's like, you know, I was thinking about it the other day, like putting distortion on a guitar, that's period an experimental idea.
Yeah. Think about,
overdriving an amp, you know, when people overdrove amps for the first time, that's experimental. Is, you know what I mean? Like it's interesting. Absolutely. Like yesterday's experimental is today's like almost normal. And sometimes I feel like, you know, are we gonna then 20 years from now have a bunch of kids like in high school wearing MERS Bau shirts and you're not cool if you don't wear a MERS Bau shirt?
We're already there. Yeah. I worked with a kid.
Well, I don't know. I have no idea
that was like that.
They're doing. Yeah.
I worked with an 18-year-old kid. Yeah. He's a metalhead. He has a MERS Bau vinyl. Everyone he hangs out with knows what that is at the very least. It's a bit ironically tinged as Gen Z does or whatever, not to catch all. But this kid rocks also.
That's pretty cool. Like that's,
he's only 8 years younger than me, but it's still that's enough.
That makes me happy. I mean, even if, you know, I guess the ironic thing, like I don't know, how do we define ironic? You know what I mean? Does he just say that he hates it or likes it, sorry, and then he actually kind of just doesn't like it? I think
it's just like, MERS Bau, haha, or whatever.
Oh, right? Okay. Like, yeah, I have it on vinyl, but yeah, like.
But he's listened to all of what he has, Pulse Demon on vinyl. Yeah. He's listened to it multiple times.
Huh.
But he's also, while he's listening to it, he's sending me short selfie videos of him like smiling, listening to it.
Okay.
But I don't know. But
that's kind of weird, but.
Yeah. This kid rocks, man. He's awesome. He would love Amnesian. I'll send him Amnesian.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, do it. Yeah. Oh, my God.
He got me to revisit Cannibal Corpse, this kid.
Good.
He was like, Cannibal Corpse is very good. And I'm like, are they? I like them, but it's been a long time. And
they,
he sent me their new album, and it was actually very good.
So good. And it's the guitar player who just joined, Eric Rutan, who's been in like, he was in Morbid Angel. And he was in another band before called Ripping Corpse.
Yeah.
And then he was in, you know, Hate Eternal. And, like, that guy is a phenomenal guitar player. And I think just kind of revitalized. Not that they weren't unvital. Like, they were amazing. But he kind of, like, put new energy into it. And, that new album is just, like, it's, you know, just everyone's, like, yes, this is, you know, Cannibal. You know, right now it's, like, this is awesome. And I'm stoked for that. Because, like, I kind of, like, you know, I was obsessed with that band. You know, I have it's, like, a 15-year box set thing with, like, set lists from the shows inside it that I got, from the shows and da 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 da, and like, you know, and then I still liked them, but I was, you know, focusing on other things, and then, you know, I kind of fell out of listening to them all the time. They did a few albums I listened to, and they're like, these are sweet, but then like now I'm like, oh fuck, I should have stayed on it. You know what I mean? Like it's just, you know, I was obsessed with that band. It became a bit more of a back burner for me, and then now I'm like, okay, you know, I've got to go revisit the albums that like Kill and Torture was another one or something like that. Yeah, I didn't write them off, but I didn't pay them as much due as I should have, you know.
That happens with legacy bands, though. Like,
yeah,
if they don't break up and they keep making records, at some point you are going to stop listening to them, right?
Like, yeah, you'll be like, okay, I know you're doing it. You're doing it right. I'm going to, like, explore other stuff. And then, you know, and then, but then you come back and, like, yeah, I definitely have come back with a new one. Or it's like, oh, fuck yeah. Like,
because
they're doing it even more so than before.
Yeah.
And they're, like, 50 years old. Like,
yeah.
If I'm 50 and I can do that, that's awesome.
Yeah. Because they're been like, they haven't changed their sound all that much, but they are so fucking good at it. Like,
yes.
They're so fucking good at it.
They, you know, they kind of put the genre, you know, like, it's there. That's the, you know, that's the kind of, like, right now the staple band for is, like, Cannibal Corpse. Like,
yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Sweet. I don't think I have anything else to ask you.
Yeah. It's cool. It's been great. It's been a lot of fun.
I'm glad.
I feel weird now. Like, what did I say? What did I even talk about?
Well, we talked about a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I don't remember now. It's this happens when you get old.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and there's the black hole of Zoom. You know, it's like,
yeah,
am I even talking to a real person?
It's nonstop with Zoom in the pandemic. So
yeah. Okay, I'm gonna stop recording. If you want to do some plugs, feel free.
Huh?
If you want to do some plugs, like some links, plugs and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, if you want to check out Bent Window Records, we have Instagram at Bent Window Records. That's mainly where everything, kind of all the information now goes through. There's a Facebook. The Bandcamp page is actually where you can hear all the artists affiliated with, along with my own projects. If you feel like, you know, challenging yourself, hearing something new, something different, go check it out. Or just go check it out in general. You might find something like, you may not, but you might hear something that a friend might like, pass it along, you know. That's all there is.
Yeah.
I didn't prepare that at all. I'm just like, well, you know, check it out if you want.
Yeah, it gets my cosign, and I'm a discernible experimental music listener, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
I like it. So
if you like it, listen to it. If you don't, you don't. Whatever. Yeah.
Sweet. Thanks, man. I'm gonna
hit
stop recording now. There we go.